Our sixth podcast today in the series of Property Patter is dealing with removing trespassers. My name is Emma Humphreys and I'm joined today by Mark Mooney of County Enforcement and by Sam Lear, one of our associates in the property litigation team here at Charles Russell Speechleys, to talk about this very interesting topic. So let's start with the basics when it comes to the removal of trespassers. Firstly, the police. Trespassing in a residential property can now be a criminal offence. But Mark, if I start with you, in your experience, how often are the police willing to get involved in removing squatters?
It's a very slim chances that the police are going to get involved with this. It's an area of legislation which they don't quite yet understand and quite frankly haven't got the resources to deal with the squatters in hand either.
No, well, that would be my concern, is the police seem to be pretty busy, don't they, with a lot of other things, and probably this isn't high on their list. Would that be fair?
100%. Also, say squatters are adapting now. Obviously, in September 2012, it obviously changed. It was illegal to squat in residential properties, but now occupiers are stating not trespassing and squatting. They are now protesting, which brings another area of legislation into it.
Ah, right, yes. They're very good at adapting, aren't they?
That's for sure.
Has that been in your experience as well, Sam? Have you ever got the police interested in a case of squatters?
I've found that some police services are more willing to get involved with others, but even when they are willing to get involved, it's typically the very high-profile cases that attract quite a bit of press attention. Yeah. And even then, their role is no more than as a stewarding kind of role. They're not really willing to get too involved, for fear of repercussions. And also, the most common answer I get from police services is that it's a civil matter in most cases, that should be dealt with by other parties.
Yeah, it's funny to say about high profile. The only time I've ever had a client say, oh, well, the police have got rid of them. And I was like, really? And they said, oh, yeah, well, Tony Blair does live two doors away. Oh, right. I see. But with commercial property, where obviously it's not a criminal offence, there are, of course, common law rights which can be exercised to try to remove squatters. And, Mark, I believe that's where the use of an enforcement agent such as yourself is key because of the risks involved with that route. Perhaps, if you don't mind, can you explain a bit more about those risks and whether or not that route tends to work?
Obviously, in commercial property, yes, right, Emma, there are common law routes to evict occupiers from there. Obviously, when squatters gain entry and obviously we're instructed to attend, we're carrying out site assessments to maintain and try and find out how squatters have gotten there and is it feasible that common law can be used to evict the occupiers from the property.
And if a property owner is in a situation where they can't use the options of the police or common law rights, then obviously they have to look at getting a court order for possession. We used to see the interim possession order procedure used a reasonable amount because that allows a party to get a court order more quickly to evict trespassers from land which is ancillary to a building. I feel as if we've seen less use of those in recent years. Sam, is that your experience as well? And if so, do you know why that might be?
No, absolutely. In fact, in my years of practice, I haven't used it once. My experience that some police branches are reluctant to enforce IPOs at all, and we would recommend that if a client does seek to go down that option, that they liaise with the police first to get a sense of how willing they're willing to enforce them. But in my experience, they are typically not.
Mm. Is that the same with you, Mark? Is that your experience as well?
Yeah, definitely. With police, they just unfortunately just haven't got the resources to deal with that. And obviously then the claimant is then subject to waiting for the full possession hearing and frankly can be a lot longer drawn out than if not going straight for the full possession order straight away.
Yeah, so probably not quite the... everyone got very excited about them initially, didn't they? And perhaps not quite as they had hoped to be.
Definitely, that's for sure.
And Sam, you're the person who can take care of the paperwork when it comes to issuing a claim for possession and getting the evidence to the court. But I suspect the key question in our listeners' minds is probably, how long does that all take?
Well, naturally, there are a range of factors that determine timeframes, and given that courts are acutely aware of the consequences of awarding possession orders or injunctions, particularly in high-profile cases, it is essential that the evidence is compelling, and in order to gather such compelling evidence, that can take a bit of time. In a recent protester case that I acted on, we had binders upon binders of photographic evidence and witness statement evidence. We had over 100 hours of video footage from a range of different angles and sources. So time is required to process all that information and to concisely summarise all the evidence by way of a witness statement. But this being said, there will be occasions where an urgent order will be required, and the gathering and processing of evidence can be dealt with in a day or two, provided that coffee is in good supply.
Yeah, the caffeine is essential. And is there any risk that the order of possession might not actually be made at the hearing?
This goes back to the point about needing to prepare thoroughly. A good judge will recognise the implications of not granting a possession order, and particularly in urgent cases, the judge will try to make an appropriate order there and then. However, judges will adjourn if there is a misstep or if the claimant has not satisfied a particular requirement. And there's also a wealth of information online which protesters and squatters use to great effect. And it is not uncommon in my experience to see a representative, so-called, who usually will not want to name themselves as a defendant, but they will try to filibuster the proceedings by throwing in questions of doubt as to whether service had been validly effected, and they might try and delay because they need to take no further legal advice. And given that defendants could be on the hook for damages and costs, few would actually want to name themselves as a defendant. But the courts are unlikely to entertain blatant stalling attempts. Judges do typically see right through that.
Yeah, they do give it a bit of a critical eye, don't they? I've seen a few efforts in my time. I've seen people rock up going, oh, but I've got this tenancy agreement and things like that. So, yeah. And when it comes to enforcement of a possession order, that requires a county court bailiff or a high court enforcement agent. Mark, of course, you're a High Court enforcement agent. Can you explain what benefits that offers to a property owner who's managed to get an order for possession, and how does it work if that order was made in the county court?
Obviously, if the order's made in the county court, Emma, it needs to be transferred to the High Court for enforcement purposes. Once that, a writ of possession obviously will be granted, and then we will be able to enforce against that. With this, it's a lot more speedier recovery. The county court bailiffs, as we all know, are massively snowed under with their lead times, and generally high court enforcement officers, we can get writs issued extremely quickly following legislations. And then also, we have a greater resource and pool of trained personnel to deal with evicting trespassers. They've evolved over the years, and fortunately the county court bailiff, if they did attend, quite frankly, would withdraw quickly because they haven't got the correct resources and, most importantly, the correct training to deal with that.
No, that's been my experience as well, and the rare times that I've relied on a county court bailiff, sometimes you don't get the order to transfer. It's very frustrating because, obviously, you know, they don't have, well, as you say, they don't have the resources to approach it with quite the same tenacity, so it can be very, very painful when you've got that rather than the high court enforcement, as you say. And finally, a question for you both. From your experiences in dealing with trespassers, I'm going to invite each of you to give me an idea of what you would say is key to ensuring that their removal is as swift and painless as possible. Mark, do you want to go first?
Yeah, definitely. I think it comes in relation to knowing who you're removing. It's clear background checks, site assessments, risk assessments, operational plans, and knowing that you are correctly resourced and you've got the correct trained personnel on site. There's no point in attending properties under-resourced. Quite frankly, what's going to do is incur the landlord further restraints there afterwards, because you're going to have to withdraw because you've not got the right personnel or the right numbers of team on site to deal with that current influx of personnel on site. Sometimes it may not necessarily be the people inside you've got to be concerned about, but the response which they can get and the support they can get from other nearby squats and other occupiers to resist against that eviction.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point, actually, that preparation. You know, we always say about a lot of things, don't we, but preparation is key. I won't say what it prevents, but it's key.
100%.
And Sam, what about you? What, in your experience, is a key point really to bear in mind?
Well, the first point, obviously, Emma, is that legal advice should be obtained immediately, and absolutely no attempts absolutely. Should be made by potential claimants themselves to remove any unwanted guests, particularly in residential contexts where there could be criminal liability that's yes. attached to that.
Yes, good point.
But normally at the very start of a new matter, I would typically engage enforcement agents like Mark immediately so that they can attend the site, make a survey and make an experienced call as to whether they are able to use their common law powers of removal without the need for potentially costly court proceedings. And if not, that's when we can start the evidence gathering. And again, often Mark's team or any enforcement agent will compile evidence as part of their initial survey. I once had a case not that long ago where the police had advised our client that it needed a court order to remove travellers. But with the help of Mark and his team, we were able to carry out a lawful eviction with minimal fuss within one day. If court proceedings are required, then obviously, as explained before, the evidence is key and it has to be compelling and extensive.
Yeah, and it's got to be, again, whichever route you go, you need to be well prepared, don't you, at the end of the day. You want to go down that route knowing that at the end of it you're getting possession. That's, that's the key, isn't it? Well, thank you very much, both. That's been a really handy guide through to turfing out trespassers. And thank you for your time also to our listeners.